In the CBS legend, Edward R. Murrow and his team invented broadcast journalism. TV critic Peter J. Boyer says that legend is not far from the truth, but in the last few years, the network has rejected the styles and philosophies that made the outstanding reputation of CBS News. Boyer describes CBS News as a broken-hearted and defeated institution. He explains how it got that way in his new book, Who Killed CBS? The Undoing of America's Number One News Network. Boyer is the television correspondent for the New York Times and a former national correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He served as television critic for National Public Radio's Morning Edition and as media critic for the CBS Morning News. Peter J. Boyer, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
Let's take the vital signs of CBS News first and see how dead it is in your terms. I mean, what are the signs of it not being what it once was?
Well, I suppose you could consider the question on two planes. I mean, there still is, of course, a CBS News, and there still is a building with CBS News printed on the side of it. The CBS News that interested me, the CBS News that was worth writing about, let's put it that way, that in fact gave the place its worth, was the CBS News that specialized in journalism, that really did set the standard in broadcasting for journalism. The CBS News that was better than it ever had to be, the CBS News of Murrow and Severide and Collingwood and those guys in the radio days, and in the Cronkite, through the Cronkite era and the television time, that CBS News was quite consciously altered, ultimately from a corporate mandate to turn the institution, turn CBS News into a profit center. And it was a very conscious decision that ultimately brought the place to grief. I mean, it brought the place to grief principally because the people inside CBS News continued to think of themselves as the heirs to Murrow and Cronkite, while the people on top at CBS News did not.
Why is the death of CBS News, or its alleged death, of significance to viewers? Why is it important to people who don't work there?
For this reason. You have to first accept the premise that CBS News is an important institution, and I will make that case happily. For one thing, the airwaves belong to you and me and to your listeners. I mean, the Communications Act 90, I mean, they are obliged to set one tiny corner of their enterprise, CBS the corporation, aside for public service, and the way they had done it best was in news. CBS News, beyond that, was, and to some degree remains, a public trust, I think. It was CBS News and Murrow, and See It Now, in the emerging television age, that in fact probably turned the tide of opinion in the McCarthy era. Sure, there had been a lot of reporting about it. In fact, Murrow was probably late on the McCarthy issue. But when he confronted McCarthy and the issue of McCarthyism in that See It Now in the mid-50s, it turned the tide of opinion. Walter Cronkite, Halberstam and other print reporters had been telling the story of Vietnam for years before Cronkite finally decides to get out of his anchor chair and go there for 6 days. But once he went there for 6 days, returns and tells the world that maybe the Vietnam War isn't winnable and that we should withdraw with honor, instantly, as Lyndon Johnson and any of his men will tell you, that issue was decided. A Cronkite show again in Watergate. He turned over two nights to special Watergate reports. That is said to have turned the tide of public opinion in Watergate. CBS News was the place of defense of the United States, of the selling of the Pentagon, of harvest of shame. It was a place that sought to uplift and inform first. And if we can also get ratings, well, that's nice. That is important to viewers. The fact that that 12 years ago, fully 80% of the best working documentary makers in this country worked at CBS News, and today that staff is down to one, means something to viewers in this country.
TV critic Peter J. Boyer is my guest. We're discussing the subject of his new book, Who Killed CBS? Let's talk first about some of the background that led to the changes in philosophy at the news department at CBS.
Yes.
First of all, tell me if I'm right here. CBS used to be the number one network, and now it's number three?
Yes. Their problems are not limited to news. They were the number one, this year. 3 weeks ago, they finished in last place for the first time since there has been a CBS. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking of the primetime entertainment ratings.
So part of what happened here, you describe in your book how CBS had really had primacy, you know, in the ratings. Then ABC started making this run for the affiliates,
right,
and tried to get affiliates to defect from CBS and NBC to ABC,
right.
and then the whole balance of power started to shift.
What happened? There were large forces at work here, some of them actually quite grand, historically speaking. I mean, we're talking about generation, and my story is a very particular story showing how these forces played out in what, in fact, was a very insular, very finite, very easy to pry apart and look at institution, CBS News. But the forces that were taking place, we are now in the coming of age of the Vietnam generation, the post-Cronkite generation, if you will. Walter and his generation inside CBS were moving aside. On the corporate end of it, Mr. Paley, Bill Paley, who founded the company and who had set aside CBS News into a gilded cage, as it was called, he was stepping aside and being replaced by a corporate management. People who went to business school and believed in setting up economics models that said, well, broadcasting is our maturing money cow. We've got to milk it for all the cash we can get to pay for the new businesses that will ultimately replace it. They were the people who in the late 70s, beginning 1980-81, looked at CBS News, and they had no special feel for it. They hadn't invented the place. They hadn't decreed, as had Paley, there will be news. They looked at it and saw another division, like records or stations or anything else. And they asked the question, why can't CBS News operate at a profit? And they put into place people, including the very colorful character, perhaps the central character of my book, Van Gordon Sauter. They put into place managers at the news division that would carry out this new vision. And the vision was, let's make news programs that can get ratings, that can get the broadest possible audience. In other words, let's be television first and journalists second. And that's standing the CBS legacy on its head, and the place just came apart from inside after that.
Well, it's almost amazing looking back now that things had ever been otherwise. news was allowed to operate without worrying about.
It is the unlikeliest thing. In a way, I suppose we should be counting our blessings that there ever was a CBS News. It is quite unlikely in the television age. I mean, television is a wonderfully seductive medium. The visual imperative is so compelling on television. How in the world did anybody ever get away with putting black and white migrant farm workers, for goodness sakes, on television when you can put a talking horse named Mr. Ed on? Well, in fact, Ed Murrow did put that on, and in fact, it made a big difference in this country, at least in the minds of a lot of viewers. It was an unlikely confluence of events that caused CBS News to be great, and it was a much more rational, understandable series of events that undid CBS News.
A more empirical, measurable series. So Van Gorder Sorter becomes the new president of CBS News, with this understanding that news should like go to work for the network, make ratings, make money. What were some of the first changes he made to the news division, to what we'd see on television?
Well, the very first change he made was a series of personnel changes. His first instruction was to make Dan Rather work. I don't mean literally go to work. I mean to make him succeed.
Mm-hmm.
This
was shortly after he
had
replaced Cronkite.
That's right. In fact, the fact that Rather was failing so unhappily and so miserably as Walter's replacement in the ratings prompted the early arrival of a Van Gordon Sauter. And what he did was remake the institution in Dan Rather's image. He got rid of all of Walter's people. He just literally almost threw them out the door. They ended up, dispersed throughout the CBS News empire. He brought in people who understood the message, Dan is God in this place. Dan has to be comfortable to look well on television, and to make him comfortable, we all have to be on his team, which is how Dan came to have more power at CBS News than any anchor ever had or probably should have, which, of course, led to its own series of difficulties later on. I mean, not least among them, the fact that Walter Cronkite himself, who was being paid $1 million a year as a special correspondent for CBS News, wasn't allowed on the CBS News air.
Now, what was the rationale behind not allowing him on the air with Rather?
To quote Van Sauter, almost precisely, Walter made Dan nervous. Having Walter around sent, in their minds, dual messages to both insiders and viewers, it occurred to them, I suppose in their mind's eye, if there is such a thing as a corporate mind's eye, imagine a television screen with Dan Rather and Walter sharing it, basically. where are viewers' eyeballs going to go? They're going to go to Uncle Walter. And in fact, of course, to this day, Walter can walk into a room and get the attention of a Hollywood star. I think that was what was on their minds. I know that that was what was on the mind of Van Gordon Sauter when he decreed that essentially that Walter wouldn't have a role in the new CBS News, which leads you to the unbelievable circumstance of election night 1984, Walter Cronkite sat alone in his apartment watching the election results in his pajamas in Manhattan.
You mentioned the amount of power that was given to Dan Rather. One of the things he did was draw up an A-list of reporters, of the reporters he thought were the best, and they weren't allowed to report
other
programs.
Imagine in a place where people believe they are they believe their own publicity, that we're the New York Times of broadcasting, that ours is the broadcaster record. People who knew themselves to be the best. Imagine the effect of suddenly walking down the hallway one day and realizing that you're not on something called, that an A-list has been drawn up and you're not on it. You wear glasses. You are thick of build, as was Ike Pappas. You know, Ike Pappas had been on how many tours of Vietnam, had had eggs thrown at him in riots in Skokie, Illinois, just because he was holding a CBS camera, for God's sakes. You're from CBS? Bam! You know, people throwing things at him. Imagine now being told that you can't get on the air just because you're a thick Greek immigrant. Imagine being Marlene Sanders, a great correspondent, a former vice president of documentaries, never getting your phone calls returned, never getting your story ideas considered. Why? Because she was in her 50s and was less cosmetically appealing. She wasn't an A-lister. Well, these things probably aren't worth moral judgment from the outside, and it's maybe only interesting, you know, to insiders by themselves. But what they did was create just a complete division of will inside the place, and it turned the place upon itself because they felt so strongly about themselves as journalists, and suddenly there is this division. It caused them to fall apart when the other things from the outside started happening, Ted Turner and Boesky and all of that.
One other thing I want to get to during the reign of Van Gordon Sauter at CBS News, one of his most infamous decisions was putting in Phyllis George as the anchor of, was it still called the CBS Morning News
then?
Yes,
it was.
And I guess in a lot of ways that kind of epitomized the kind of unholy marriage of show business and news.
That's right. I mean, it is the perfect example of just short-term management and in a way an example of corruption of values. And I mean, Phyllis George, who had never been a journalist, was suddenly the wealthiest journalist, woman journalist at CBS, and an anchor on the preeminent news network at $1 million a year the day before she hadn't even been in journalism.
So all of this was coming from the top, basically, from management.
Yes, it was coming from the top, but there was complicity from within. Dan Rather, for example, who genuinely comes from that legacy of Murrow and Cronkite and Collingwood and those people. I mean, Dan Rather, one of the best television reporters who ever lived, turned his back just for a moment, he thought, on that because he needed to succeed more than anything else. Suddenly he has a new manager, a big bearded, pipe-smoking, irreverent, profane former newspaper man named Van Gordon Sauter, who was putting his arm around Dan and massaging Dan and taking care of Dan and who was throwing the guys out of the building who were hanging around and bad-mouthing Dan. Suddenly this guy says to him, Dan, let's put you in a sweater. Dan, and it's easy, you can understand in retrospect why Rather was willing to go along with all that, why he didn't play the heir to Murrow when some of this was going on at first. Ultimately, of course, he came to take that posture.
Are we talking about anything different at CBS, different from what happens at the other networks? I mean, for instance, on the morning news, you had David Hartman on ABC. Now, he was a kind of a washed-up actor at the time that he accepted that position.
That's right. that's in fact directly and exactly put. Yes, it is something different, and in a way the question answers the question. The fact that you don't hear much about it at ABC tells you something. It is as if the New York Times tomorrow not only went to a full-color front page, which would raise eyebrows, but they went to a full-cover front page that, as its lead story, was not Beirut or what have you, but was an opinion poll on what people think of astrology in the White House. If that happened at the New York Times, there would be books written about it, I promise you. And that's what happened at CBS. ABC never was the standard in broadcast journalism. CBS was.
Is the CBS News as show business factor leveling out a little bit? For instance, the entertainment-oriented morning news show that Meredith Hartley co-hosted is off the air.
Yes.
And there's a new show that's now very, very similar to,
exactly.
to the Today Show.
In fact, if anything, it's probably more news-oriented than the other two on the other networks. Yes, I think, because the people inside the place are still journalists. They are not very good at entertainment. They're just not nearly as good at entertainment as they are at journalism, which is why, by the way, West 57th and 48 Hours aren't nearly as successful as A, entertainment programs, and B, serious news programs. News folks, not surprisingly, tend to be best at doing news. But the other part of this, I mean, I think in a strange way what's interesting is the effect it had on these people. These are interesting people, and what they went through was kind of almost a professional genocide in a strange way. I mean, it was the invalidation of something that they believed in, and something not only that, but something that they were. And what has happened in the last 10 years to them, maybe they may not be able to recover from. Well, the ones who are out of work certainly won't recover.
My guest is television critic Peter J. Boyer. He writes for The New York Times. He's also the author of the new book, Who Killed CBS? And we'll talk more about network news after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. New York Times television correspondent Peter J. Boyer is my guest, author of Who Killed CBS? We're talking about some of the kind of programming crises that affected CBS News. Let's look at some of the economic crises. There were a couple of really big corporate takeover attempts, one that was waged by the group Fairness in Media, which was an arch-conservative group that would have been an ideological takeover of CBS, and the other was waged by Ted Turner of cable television.
Well, I mean, those are good examples of my contention is that CBS News defined the company, was its soul, its heart, gave it its worth. It tells you something that the reason CBS ultimately came into play on Wall Street and ultimately was taken over in a sort of a backdoor takeover by Lawrence Tisch, the reason it was vulnerable was because of CBS News. I mean, in a way, it was dramatically perfect that it would be CBS News that opened the door to assaults from the outside. It was because, simply, a couple of lawyers and a political advisor of Jesse Helms in North Carolina believed that Dan Rather manifested a liberal bias that they began their takeover attempt. You remember the conservatives, a million conservatives were going to buy one share of stock each and then they were going to own it. Ted Turner, that sort of jangled the ball bearings on the vehicle, and Ted Turner got involved then, and Ivan Boesky for a time got involved, and CBS sort of overreacted under Tom Wyman's leadership and did an incredibly expensive buyback plan to make the place less attractive, among other things, and harder to take over. And in the meantime, as a white knight, in steps Lawrence Tisch, who basically buys CBS for $127 a share after the board had turned down a $160 a share offer from Marvin Davis. And the great irony of that is, of course, it is you could make the contention and wouldn't find a lot of argument that CBS News anyway, and perhaps the whole company, would be much better off today had Ted Turner taken them over. A, the stockholders would have gotten more money than $127 a share. And B, CBS News, instead of having less news, would have another whole news network, would have CNN. It is a sort of sad and bitter irony for CBS, as things turned out. Of course, because Larry Tisch's first act, basically his first dramatic act, was the gutting of CBS News.
Do you think that television networks are still vulnerable to this type of unfriendly takeover?
I think in a way it doesn't matter so much anymore.
Why
now.
Not?
Let's say that CBS were sold tomorrow to a malevolent company.
Mm-hmm.
What could they do that would make the place less valuable as an institution, as a public trust? What would they do? Do away with documentaries? Sorry, that's been done. Fire 1 out of 10 people? Sorry, that's been done. Have the place fall into third place in the ratings? Sorry, that's where they are now. I mean, strip the company of its other businesses, such as publishing, songs, records. Sorry, that's been done in the last year and a half. Unless they like turned it over to the mob, I can't imagine. I don't think, in other words, that that there is that much left to lose. I do think, by the way, that they are subject to further sale. I think there are probably a lot of people who would like to buy CBS. I think somebody probably will, and I think Larry Tisch will make a lot of money off of it.
Do you think that what happened at CBS is just a case study of what's happening in a lot of corporations around the country in different types of operations?
Yes.
And what I'm thinking here is that CBS was always under the leadership of William Paley. Is he retired now officially? What's his status?
He's chairman now, but he's 86 years old.
But he doesn't have the control that he used to.
No.
And since he lost that control, there's been a series of other managers coming in and really trying to make their vision of what the corporation should be with a lot of changes. And
that's
this
right.
kind of thing happens at corporations all over the country where traditions that have been established are overturned very quickly by someone who wants to make their mark.
That's right.
Or has a better idea for making a quick profit.
There are few institutions, however, that are so idiosyncratic that the way it was always done may be, in fact, the only way it can be done and still have what the thing you had. In a way, it's sort of broadcasting's huge version of the fact that there's no more mom and pop grocery stores on your corner, and that they all now belong to A&P or whomever. I mean, in a way, it's the version of that.
If CBS News isn't what it used to be, how is it different for us as viewers? What do you think we're missing now?
Here's how it's different. Instead of Harvest of Shame, instead of the selling of the Pentagon, instead of Defense of the United States, and instead of these broadcasts, what you now have is 48 Hours is a perfect example. 48 Hours is supposedly the documentary face of CBS News these days. It's a weekly series anchored by Dan Rather. Quick into a story, quick out of a story, 48 hours on whatever street, and it changes. They discovered very early on, after going to the Gaza, perfect subject matter, after doing 48 hours on the campaign, perfect subject matter, that news, hard news stories, didn't get quite the ratings that they got when they did 48 hours on Runaway Street, which showed teenage prostitutes in Hollywood, or 48 hours with televangelism. And as a result, there is now a standing mandate that 48 hours will not consider what most of us consider serious news subjects, which is why last week you had 48 hours at the Westminster Dog Show. I'm telling you, that is the current CBS News documentary. That makes a difference to viewers. If you're getting 48 hours at the Westminster Dog Show and the producers, the journalists of CBS News are being told you can't go do Noriega in 48 hours in Panama, that might be an interesting story, wouldn't it, to see CBS News correspondents down there doing that? They can't do it. Why? It's too newsy for CBS News. That means something to viewers.
Do you think that the glory days of the TV networks are over?
Yes. Sadly, in a strange way. I mean, I think they are over. I still don't see anything on the horizon that will have quite the weight and influence and resources that the networks have and will continue to have for some time. But I think it's clearly gone the day that they are the three voices and basically nothing else exists out there. That is finished, and I think it's also gone the day that they have the commitment to public affairs and news that they once had. I mean, I think probably in the horizon, sooner rather than later, we will begin to see independent news-based production companies providing ersatz documentaries for the networks.
My guest is Peter J. Boyer, author of the new book, Who Killed CBS? He also writes for the New York Times. Now, you formerly were a correspondent on CBS Morning
Yes.
News.
Yes.
So I could see how writing this book would have been a little bit tricky because these are your old bosses in a way that you were writing
Yes.
about. Did you have any second thoughts about whether you could be objective enough?
Happily, I was
people who work someplace have an axe to grind somewhere along the
yes,
line.
Yes, so happily I was there under... Given the circumstances, the broad circumstances, I was there under relatively pleasant circumstances. I had a nice, safe contract anyway there,
mm-hmm.
and I left voluntarily because I wanted to go work at the New York Times. And again, happily, I was just a reporter there. I wasn't, I wasn't a player really, and I was there just about a year. So that this book is a piece of reporting, not in any way a reflection of my time there.
Was it odd for you when you were doing television after having written about it?
Oh, was it strange. I think it was strange for two reasons. One, I mean, some of us are just born to be in broadcasting, and some of us are just more inclined to mess around with words and a typewriter and never have to say things publicly. And on that level, it was odd. It was also odd, yes, in fact, to walk through the hallways and have people know you from your stories. And, you know, you've written about them. Maybe you've said good things. Maybe you've said bad things. And now suddenly you're working alongside them. There was a strangeness there at first, but, you know, I got over that.
What about seeing yourself on television and having to ask yourself, am I good TV or bad TV?
I never had to ask that because I was convinced from the first moment that I was terrible TV. That my wife, of course, and my mother, and even those at CBS News were nice enough to say that, in fact, I wasn't. But I didn't like the process of going on television and sort of making show. It wasn't... I would write a script and think, I'm finished. I've written what a nice little script I've written. And, of course, in television, that's just the beginning. Writing a script is, you know, nothing. In fact, a lot of reporters don't even write their own scripts. What counts then is going on, looking right, looking into the camera and saying it right. That part I just never particularly got used to. And happily, I was able to re-gear.
In the acknowledgments to your new book, Who Killed CBS, you thank Van Gordon Sauter and Dan Rather for spending time with you. And I was kind of surprised that they did, especially given like the title of the book.
Me too. I was a little
and,
bit surprised.
And you really think that it's Van Gordon Sauter who is responsible in a lot of ways for the demise of CBS News.
I do.
We only have a few seconds left, I should tell you.
they both, I was surprised that they did. I think I treated them both fairly, by the way. But that you're right, they don't come out completely positively. But I think that it occurred to them it's better to have a voice in this book than not have one. And they did give of their time generously.
Did you make them any promises of...
Absolutely none. Yeah. Absolutely none.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for
thank
talking
you.
With us.
This has been fun. Thank you.
And will you ever do a television commentary again, do you think, if you were off?
I'd like to. I really got a kick doing that in NPR. Now, radio's different from television.
Oh, radio you do, but television you wouldn't again?
Yeah. Well, you know, radio would have to worry about your tie being on straight.
Right.
Is it on straight?
Okay. Thanks for being with us. My guest has been Peter J. Boyer, and you might remember his commentaries from NPR's Morning Edition. He's with the New York Times now as the television correspondent. He's also the author of the new book, Who Killed CBS? The Undoing of America's Number One News Network. It's just been published by Random House. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.